From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made just about 2 years ago, the last congressional election. Incumbent Louise Slaughter won a 15th term, but it was very close. She defeated Republican Gatestown Supervisor Mark Cassini by fewer than 900 votes out of about 190,000 cast. This time around, there will be a lot more voters at the polls. It's a presidential year, and the race between Cassini and Slaughter is getting a lot more attention. Republican strategist Steve Schmidt has said that Republicans should now focus on holding the House. Schmidt says Donald Trump is a disaster for the ticket. He says Republicans are going to lose the race for the White House. They could lose the Senate. It's possible that the Trump effect will even go all the way down and affect Democrats' efforts to recapture the House. Now, if that's going to happen, then incumbents like Louise Slaughter must win their races. Schmidt advises Republican candidates to make the case that they would be a check on a Clinton White House. We've invited both Slaughter and Cassini to join us in studio. We've had invitations out to Congresswoman Slaughter for months, but she has yet to commit to an interview on this program, and she has turned down our invitation for either a Voice of the Voter debate or a joint appearance with Mark Cassini here on Connections. So today, it is just the Republican candidate, Gatestown Supervisor Mark Cassini, and it's nice to have you back here. Thanks for being here.
Oh, Evan, it's great to be back. I really enjoy being on the program and talking with you and your listeners.
Well, short interruption from our producer, Megan Mack, who is in studio for, can you do it in 60 seconds or less?
I can be so fast.
You can be fast.
As you know, this is our fall membership drive, and we're asking for your support to continue programs like this one, Connections, here at WXXI. And this is an opportunity for your dollars to matter. Your voice matters. You're about to hear an hour with one of our political candidates. Where else can you hear that? You can call in and ask questions. And we want to continue to make that option possible for you. So if you have just 2 minutes or less, feel free to call 454-6300. You can talk to one of our volunteers who can help you set up a donation for as little as $5 a month. So within the next couple hours, feel free to give us a call and support Connections and all of our other great programming here at WXXI.
All right. Thank you, Megan Mack, producer. And Megan's right here. We've got a chance for the next 50-plus minutes with Mark Cassini to talk about the issues at length. We'll take your calls and questions, some of which have already come in. And Mark is excited to talk about Donald Trump. So let's start there.
Well, let me first say that I want to endorse the push to bring dollars to WXXI. It's a great organization. And I think you do wonderful work. You put out a great product and certainly enjoy Connections. So it's certainly worthy of your dollars. And if you can spare a few dimes, I think you're investing in a great organization that puts out a great product.
Are you running for Panderer in Chief?
Yes, sir.
All right. Well,
how'd I do?
Yeah, very good. Very good. I really do want to get past Donald Trump as quickly as we can. We already have listener questions about it. And number one, you are still supporting him. I'm not saying wholeheartedly, but you have not de-endorsed, have you?
No, I have not.
All right, you're still supporting Donald Trump. You said on WROC-TV this week in a debate with Congresswoman Slaughter that you still support Donald Trump primarily on two grounds, the economy and protecting the Constitution. And what I want to hit here is protecting the Constitution. Why do you feel like he would protect the Constitution better than, say, Hillary Clinton?
Okay, and I'll get to that. I just wanted to make sure that people understood. I see both of these candidates is extremely flawed. We talked about this in March. There are so many things that I disagree with Mr. Trump on, and there are so many things that I disagree with Mrs. Clinton on, but you know, it's kind of an odd thing. There are a number of positions that Secretary Clinton has taken that are more Republican than the positions Donald Trump has taken. It's an odd year. But both of these individuals have flawed character, and it comes down to me to looking at issues specifically that I can support. And one's the economy, and specifically to your question, the other's the Constitution. I'm concerned that when we start talking about interpretations of the Constitution, that we don't get into activism on the bench. I don't think the Supreme Court should be an activist body. I think it should look at the law the way the representatives of the people of this country have written it, with the way the Constitution has been written, and not try to interpret beyond what the Constitution and what those
You're
laws
You're an originalist.
Say. Yes.
Yeah.
And some people say it's a living, breathing Constitution, and I think there is some validity to that, but you know, there's only so much room for a living, breathing Constitution. Otherwise, you change the Constitution, you change the law, and that's the right way to go, not to have judges decided that a particular amendment should be eliminated or interpreted to their particular liking.
Well, 29 conservative and libertarian legal scholars released a joint letter this week regarding Donald Trump because they said as conservatives, they said they understood the idea that you may not like the choice, but this is a Supreme Court election, or this is a protected constitutional election. And this is from the Atlantic Monthly on Tuesday. Quote, for 29 originalist legal and conservative scholars, the answer is no. Voting for Donald Trump does not protect the Constitution. On Monday, the group released a letter titled Originalists Against Trump, which laid out their reasons for opposing the Republican nominee. Many Americans still support Trump and the belief that he will protect the Constitution, the letter says. We understand that belief, but we do not share it. End quote. And then the letter addresses the issue of the Supreme Court, stating, quote, we also understand the argument that Trump will nominate qualified judicial candidates, but the scholars add, quote, we do not trust him to do so. More importantly, we do not trust him to respect constitutional limits in the rest of his conduct in office, of which judicial nominations are only one part. End quote. Who are these 29 legal scholars? Stephen Calabresi, who co-founded the Federalist Society, which is a conservative legal group. Ilya Soman, who's a libertarian professor at George Mason. The law professor Jonathan Adler, who is known as the legal mind behind the greatest challenge to Obamacare in the courts. George Will and others. They're saying you're wrong on this. You disagree with them.
I respectfully disagree with their positions. I would prefer to hear from the candidates themselves, and I have. And if you listen to last night's debate, Secretary Clinton said quite frankly she wanted to put people in that were going to lean towards X, Y, and Z, and she laid out a whole bunch of issues that she wanted them to lean towards. I prefer, and actually is much as I dislike some of the positions and the comments that Donald Trump has made, I told you in March, I wish we had other choices. He is right. We should not put people on the bench, on the Supreme Court specifically, that are going to be activist judges. Interpret the law for what it is. And last night it was clear. Secretary Clinton said, no, I want judges that are going to interpret it for this and interpret it for that. Donald Trump did get into a little bit of that, but he backed up and he said, well, you know, I want people to interpret the Constitution for what it is. And that is the correct way to go. We can change laws. We can do things legislatively, but we should not do it from the Supreme Court, not from the bench. And that's my position. That's why I think it's important to protect the Constitution.
Not everyone writes articles that you love or articles about you that you love, but I've never heard you call for the media to be sort of shut down. Donald Trump has said he wants to loosen libel laws so he can try to shut down journalists who write stories he doesn't like.
No.
Does that sound like someone who's protecting the Constitution, or does that sound like an authoritarian?
I think that sounds like an authoritarian. And when you start talking like that, it really is one of the things that bothers me about this race. I'm not going to sit here and defend some of these positions that are ridiculous on both sides. And I've heard comments similar on the other side, too. It's terrible. I'm so disappointed. I am like a lot of people. I am so disappointed with the two choices we have. But you have to take a step back and think through what is it that we need to do that's most important in this country. Obviously, jobs and the economy are numero uno. They're number one. And protecting our freedoms and Constitution is number two. And I'm going to be holding my nose. I'm not sitting here. And
sure.
I mean, Evan, we talked about this in March. I was just torn on this whole thing. It's been turning my stomach. I have to make decisions that I think are going to best move the country forward. I wish we had other choices.
Sure.
We don't.
Regarding what Steve Schmidt said, he says Republicans like you should say, forget Donald Trump. I'll de-endorse. Your job as voters is let us be the check on a Clinton White House. Because you and I both know Hillary Clinton is very likely to win at this point. And so if you're in Congress, do you feel like, is that an argument to voters that you could be a check on a Clinton White House?
I think that Congress is going to be a check on whoever is elected president, whether it's a Clinton White House or a Trump White House. And I think our job is to work with whoever the president is on behalf of the American people to the best of our ability to move the country forward. So I'm not going to get caught up into the trap I'm going to be an obstructionist or anything else. I'm going to.
Oh, I certainly don't think that.
No,
that,
I didn't
that's
mean
what
it
Steve
that
Schmidt's
way.
But I take your point. I'm not trying to trap you into saying you're going to be an obstructionist.
Yeah.
But I think I understand what Steve Schmidt is saying. He's saying if you're a conservative voter, this is your chance to at least give us some balance of power. When it comes to the results, you going to accept the results of this election?
Of course. That was terrible. I heard that last night. Of course.
Okay, you're going to accept the results. Very good. On the subject of economics, let's get there because that's been the core of what you've been talking about.
Right.
Listeners, I'll tell you as well, Mark Cassini running against Louise Slaughter, and it's an open invitation for Louise Slaughter to join us between now and Election Day, and we certainly hope and expect that to happen. You can call the program toll-free, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. On the subject of economics, you have been tough on photonics from the beginning, and now we see some real fraying. We have seen political divisions within photonics regarding the people running the show. Elaine Calieros could end up in prison. And you have been tough about it. So if you're elected to Congress, are you going to move to block or limit funding for photonics to the best that you can going forward?
Okay. And again, going back to March, because we talked about this back in March,
yeah.
I support the photonics effort. I want it to be successful, but I also want to be honest with people about the chances for job growth and for success in our region.
Because you said, have you not said this has been a little overpromised, or at least you're concerned?
Oh, there's no question about it. I think, Evan, you're right on. I've said from the very beginning, and actually I've been backed up by Dr. Kent Gardner, who is the chief economist for the Center for Governmental Research. He said any promises that jobs will be in the thousands in this area is speculative at best. Understand, this is research and development for the Department of Defense that we are providing money to. We may get a breakthrough, and I'm hoping that we do, but a lot of R&D never gets a breakthrough. So we can't just hope that someday something's going to happen. And obviously, we saw it with Photonica, with all the scandals, the corruption, the graft, and the head, as you said, Dr. Calieros, now being indicted, who may be going to jail, people are backing away. And so there's a real question mark on what's going to happen. But no, I, of course, will support anything to help this area. We have to do all in our power to help the area, support the research and development. But we have to be realistic about our chances for jobs and not put all our eggs into that basket. That's really my concern, that we put all our eggs into the photonics basket and nothing materializes.
This is where I think it's important to understand how you would work in Congress, maybe compared to the incumbent. Louise Slaughter has said that she had problems with Elaine Calieros behind the scenes, that she was uncomfortable with certain aspects. And those political divisions have not been exactly secret. There have been sort of factions within the Democratic Party or within state government. Should she have said, I'm not helping at all until we really clear up the leadership here? And if she really had problems with Calieros, should she have said, he's got to be out before the federal government supports this with tax dollars?
I don't want to speak for Congresswoman Slaughter. If it were me.
Yeah, I'm asking if it were you.
If it were me, I would have taken a step back and tried to understand the structure, the hierarchy, the organizational structure, and really define who it was that was running this. And it obviously was Dr. Calieros. And I will say it should not have been Dr. Calieros. This is not something Dr. Calieros should have been carte blanche on. But I would have stepped back and just started asking questions. And I saw something unusual, as you know, and as this community knows, if I see something that doesn't seem right, I'm not going to be quiet about it. I'm going to come out, no matter Republican, Democrat, or whatever it is. You're going to hear from me, and I'm going to let the people of this community know my concerns so that they're aware.
Okay, so before we move on to other economic topics and some phone calls as well, just to be clear on photonics then, you support projects like that can benefit the area,
yes,
this region. You're concerned that there's been an overpromise to the community on the number of jobs, and you don't like the way the leadership and some of the political infighting's happened. But if you're elected, and we're weeks away from you potentially heading to Washington, I still want to make sure we understand here. Going forward, do you think this project can still work and is still worth the investment?
The investment is still worth being made. I do not know what the results are going to be. I think anybody that sits back and just gives you speculation on what's going to happen is talking off the top of their head. We don't know. It's worth the research and development dollars for a couple of reasons, because there is a possible breakthrough that may help manufacturing jobs in the area. It's worth the research and development because the Department of Defense needs to keep up with the rest of the world when it comes to photonics research. So it is worth, and it is strategic as an investment. We just have to be cautious not to expect too much out of it.
All right, then give us the biggest difference with you and your opponent when it comes to what you think will help spur the economy in this area.
Okay. It's funny. I mentioned this during the debate. I think it kind of surprised a few people. But President Bill Clinton was talking about the corporate tax rate And he was also talking about trade, but specifically on the corporate tax rate. Keep in mind, Bill Clinton, President Clinton, whether you like him or not, he did a pretty good job as president. We had some good economic growth under his tenure. And he did cut the capital gains tax down to 15%. And that was part, I think, of the growth that we saw, because taxes do affect the way businesses compete around the world. But specifically on the corporate tax rate, he was the individual that raised it to 35% and said, when I did that, we were in the midpoint of all the other countries we were competing with. Now we're the absolute highest. And I know the argument will be made, well, effective rates are actually lower. And I've talked a little bit about that in this program. That's kind of an insincere argument because, yes, GE, there are some big companies that don't pay anything because they find loopholes. They have great lawyers. They offshore. They do a lot of things. But it's the smaller companies, the mid-sized companies that can't afford the big corporate lawyers that don't have the options available that are getting hurt the worst. And they're the ones that create most of the jobs. But going back to Bill Clinton, he said, we have to get out of being the highest tax rate in the world because we are being impacted by it. I agree 100% with the president, former President Bill Clinton. We need to reduce that in order to be competitive. Our trade agreements, Jim Brush from Century Safe has become the poster child for trade agreements and the impact that they have in our region anyways. He was the owner and he ran Century Safe for many, many years.
In Pittsford, right?
Yes, that's correct.
And several hundred jobs, yeah.
Several hundred jobs have now gone and gone to Mexico. It was a deal with Master Lock. But he wrote a great op-ed piece and he talked about the fact that here he is, a U.S. company trying to compete in China, and when the competitors from China were coming here into the U.S., they were not paying the same taxes and tariffs that he had to pay in China in order to compete into their market. He called it a protectionist market. He called it an unfair trade advantage that they had over him, that the taxes and the tariffs that he had been paying were impacting his ability to compete. So that's a real-world example on the trade deal side where we have to rethink, you know, our treaty with the WTO. By the way, interestingly enough, and a lot of people, Republicans and Democrats, supported our entry into the WTO. But as Ralph Nader, and Mrs. Slaughter was one of them, as Ralph Nader said, the WTO is NAFTA on steroids. It's taken a lot of our ability to negotiate things away from us and given it to nameless, faceless people around the world.
Are you pro-TPP or anti-TPP?
Anti-TPP.
Okay. What about other trade deals? Is there an example of a good trade deal that you like?
I can't think of one. They haven't helped us. So I can't think of one.
Even though you cited Kent Gardner earlier this hour.
Right.
He has been on this program talking about trade and talking about how the public tends to... It can be murky, and it's easy in a soundbite to bash trade without understanding the complexity of trade and the benefits in many ways.
Well, here's in a very concrete form why I'm concerned about some of the trade deals and many of the trade deals that we've done. We're trying to compete against countries, and I'm not picking on China or Mexico or any other country, but here's the reality. Let's take China, for instance. It's been the popular one to talk about. They don't have workers' comp. They don't have health insurance. They don't have Social Security. They don't have an EPA. They don't have a DEC. They don't pay their citizens decent wages. And those are all good things that we do here in America. And I can go down the list of different mandates and expenses associated and regulations associated with doing business in this country that don't exist in many of the countries that we're competing against. We cannot win when the game is rigged. So there has to be some leveling of the
playing field. Well, you want us to be more like them or them more like us?
Oh, they should be more like us. But as we do business, yeah, of course. You know, I am grateful for all the things that America has. And these are, you know, a decent wage, good health care. All those things are important. Social Security, all the great Medicare, all those things are great programs to help our citizens. Those are great things. They should be aspiring to do that with their population and treat them with more dignity.
And our trade deal should put a mandate, and otherwise we say tear things up.
I think we need to level the playing field, to be honest with you. We cannot. Our cost structures are not the same for a lot of the reasons I just mentioned. And until we recognize that, and I'm a guy that grew up in manufacturing. I mean, I've worked for manufacturing companies. I've managed in manufacturing companies. I've been part of manufacturing for most of my adult life. And so I saw the real world results. You can't win when the game's rigged.
Every phone line is lit up for Mark Cassini,
oh boy,
Gatestown supervisor, and we're going to let your phone calls drive the rest of the hour. Paul and Irondequoit, first up. Go ahead, Paul.
Paul, it's got to be an easy question. No tough ones.
Okay, I vote independent. I don't make up my mind till the end. So far, Mark Cassini's got my vote, and the main reason is, and I voted for Louise Slaughter a lot of times, is the tone of the Democratic Party on the ads that they put out and the false activity. I think it's very viable, and it reflects that Louise is not in control of her own vote. Second, I'd like to say Schumer always says that he's looking out for people that work in the manufacturing sector and all of that. Well, what's happening now is there's a whole company that's getting ready to leave this city, and nobody's talking about anything. I don't see him being in front of the ball. So anything to do with that whole situation that these people telling you they're looking out for us, they're not. I'll leave it right there.
Paul, thanks for the phone call. Mark, you want to respond to some of what you just heard? Go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, Paul, for the phone call. You know, I want to talk a little bit about what I'm seeing, and I've been a little critical of the Regional Economic Development Council, not on a personal level. I respect everybody that serves there, but I'm seeing project after project being implemented and money going into these projects, and I'm not seeing jobs coming out. I'm so frustrated, all these promises that aren't occurring. And we can talk a little bit about that in another light, but, you know, we were supposed to have a biosciences manufacturing center built at Eastman Business Park. You know where it is? Have you seen it? No. Nada. We were supposed to have the Solar Power Consortium over at 150 Canal Landing. See how many cars are in the parking lot?
Yeah, you said Tuesday night, one.
One. I mean, you can go on and on, and I don't want to bore people with all the projects that have not
happened. And maybe they would say it's going to take more time to flesh some of these out.
I think in the case of the Solar Power Consortium, I think 3 years is that's a good amount of time, specifically when they said those jobs were supposed to have been there 3 years ago. I think, you know, maybe 6 months, you'd be a little behind, a year, 2 years, 3 years. 3 years is a little long. So.
Okay, so but Paul is saying his support for you right now kind of hinges on what he feels is an unfair or at least a negative campaigning from your opponent. How do you feel about that, Mark?
Look, I'll just simply say that I prefer to talk about issues. I'm not going to control, and I can't control what other people do. I can't control their behaviors. I can't control Secretary Clinton's behaviors. I can't control, God knows, I can't control Donald Trump's behaviors. I can't control my opponent's behaviors. I can only control mine, and I'm going to focus on what it is that we need to do to move this community forward. I was born and raised here. I will die here. I like to say Gates born, Gates bred, and when I die, I'll be Gates dead because I love the community. I love the people in it. And I really, truly have a passion to make a difference, and I think I can.
Some Democrats who support Louise Slaughter say, look, some of the ads have been tough, but they cite your own words. On Tuesday night, you said a lot of what you wrote, they're citing in ads, is sort of a past life. You know, you said 11th grade compositions and things that you wrote many years ago on blogs, et cetera. And that you did write those things, but you've said that you've evolved. Some of the stuff was viewed as anti-gay. You said that you've had a personal evolution, as even Hillary Clinton has and others.
Oh, my goodness. Bill Clinton was he signed the Defense of Marriage Act, which prevented marriage equality and gay marriage in this country. Hillary Clinton has been brutal about gay marriage up until 3 years ago. There was just some emails, you know, I'll get to the emails in a second, but emails released showing some really critical statements. And it wasn't 10 years ago or 15 or 20. It was just, you know, within the last couple of years. And that's not to criticize her. The point is that we do evolve, we do grow, we do change, and we should as we learn things. And, you know, the Pope, God bless him, I love him to death. He is one of the greatest popes in my lifetime. Because he helped influence my thoughts on this, being a Roman Catholic, growing up in Gates. This wasn't an easy transition for people who think it was. It was not. But there are a lot of Catholics that are still mulling this over. I've actually evolved on this myself. Not that I'm not suggesting that if you don't think the way I do that you're wrong, but I just think the Pope is right. As people are on their faith's journey, you know, we should not judge them. That's
okay,
not our role.
And I think voters are just trying to figure out if what you're saying about this evolution, this is the same kind of question people have had about Hillary Clinton. Is this politically motivated or is it genuine? You're saying it's genuine.
Oh,
so let me ask you, Have you been to a gay wedding?
No, I haven't been to a gay wedding.
Would you go?
Yeah.
Okay. Are there
do I have gay friends? Do I have gay family members? Absolutely.
Yeah, okay. And relationships with them are good?
They're good. But it's always been, you know, one of those things. In fact, my sister Vicky, sorry, Vicky, I shouldn't have brought you out here. Love you, though.
You could have just said my sister.
Thanks. Okay, that'll help me out a lot. Thanks, Evan. She is a progressive, and she is a Hillary Clinton supporter. I come from all Democrats, by the way, so people listening, all my siblings are Democrats. In fact, there was a big fight in our family about Bernie and Hillary, who should be, and it didn't end well. It was one of those where I could duck out. Now I'm getting beat up on the other side because I'm not going with Hillary. But in any event, the point is, she has for years talked to me about this, and she goes, Mark, you know, you have to let go. You have to let go. I know what you really think. And we have had these discussions for years in my family. We've had these discussions with friends about this. And we were hoping that this was going to come out in a debate, to be honest with you. I wanted to kind of, not that I wanted to surprise somebody, but I wanted to talk about this in a debate to kind of really emphasize the point. But it was preempted. But going back to the other stuff, you know, the stuff I think that, aside from the issues on marriage equality, you know, there have been a number of ads that are put out there. I'll address a couple of them because I have this on my website. I was told Mark Acini supports tax breaks to outsource companies, you know, and this long diatribe about tax breaks that for companies that outsource jobs. You can go to my website. It's complete bunk. PolitiFact and factcheck.org. have done a review of these claims. You know what it was? I signed a tax pledge back in 2004 to say I won't raise taxes in my district. It has nothing to do with tax breaks for anybody. It just said I would not, you know, support tax increases in my district. And as a town supervisor, I've reduced the tax rate every single year I've been in office. It's a philosophy I have, you know, trying to reduce burdens on residents as well as businesses. But PolitiFact and Fact Check took this apart and just completely obliterated the argument. It was completely false. But they're still running the ad, and God bless, that's their choice. They can do whatever they want to do. There were other things. I can go through the abortion issue where they said, oh, Mark Acini would never support an abortion even to save a mother's life. Well, I've consistently said I'm pro-life, but I also believe in exceptions. And the mother's life, from every survey, and I provided the surveys on my website just to show every survey I've ever had exceptions for abortion.
Right, so you still are for exceptions there.
Oh, yeah, I always have been. I still have. I have been 20 years ago. I was when they were claiming. They took a five-word sentence in a debate and drew a conclusion, even though there was nothing to base that on. And I can go on and on and on and on, but the bottom line is, sure, I don't want to focus on that. I want to focus on how to move the community forward. This does nothing for people that are in need, that are, you know, the folks that are living in poverty, need help, the homeless, et cetera, and the joblessness that we're facing.
All right, let me get to Patricia in Gates next step. Go ahead, Patricia.
Yes, Evan. Mr. Acini, I've been a many-year supporter of Louis Slaughter, but I've been following your career and listening to some of your speeches and your positions, and I really have been impressed with your intelligence, and I felt like maybe it was time for a change. But your support of Donald Trump is a real game changer for me. Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton this is a tough election for many people because they say you have to pick the best of two bad candidates. Donald Trump is a completely different paradigm. And so I had hoped to vote for you this year, but I cannot do it because of your position on Donald Trump. And I'll take your comments offline.
All right. Thank you, Patricia. Go ahead, Mark.
Please? No, I understand. I do. It's a tough one. When you're running for office, you can't hide. You got to tell people what's on your mind. It's one of those things that I normally would have just, had I not been running for office, kept to myself and been quiet about, because I'm not happy about either choice, but I don't want to get into ridiculing Secretary Clinton. I think she's a brilliant leader. I think that she has some serious, serious character flaws. And I will tell you, Donald Trump has some serious, serious character flaws, both of them. So it's one of those difficult things. It was a dilemma that we talked about back in March. But I'll tell you this much. Most of the people that I am running into, and polling backs this up, are saying the same thing. that we have two very bad candidates. The polling is showing that, depending on the week and the month, 60 to 70% of the people, whether it's Trump or Clinton, believe that they are not honest and they're not trustworthy. When almost 70% at any one time says, "Hey, I don't think either one of these individuals are honest or trustworthy," this isn't about Republicans being concerned. If it was 30%, maybe it'd be Republicans, just Republicans concerned about Mrs. Clinton, and vice versa if it was Mr. Trump. But you're talking both of them run in the 60 to 70% range. That means most Americans, Democrats, independents, Republicans are saying the same thing. We got two really untrustworthy candidates.
There's other candidates on the ballot.
Yes, there are.
Okay.
Aleppo. You know what? I felt so bad, to be honest with you, for Gary Johnson, because that was a, honestly,
but you
can't, I don't know what you
can't vote for Gary Johnson and Bill Weld.
They're not going to win. And
Donald Trump is not going to win, and you're going to vote for him.
I don't know. I don't know. I think he has got a chance. I think she's right now, I think she's got a very solid lead, but I think that stranger things have happened in our country. It's close enough where, but I got to tell you, it's interesting as I'm going door to door, and I showed you, I was laughing a little bit, I showed you.
There's a picture he's showing me of a yard sign. There's a yard with an Adam Bello from Monroe County clerk, who's a Democrat, and Mark Cassini for Congress.
I am telling you right now that there are numbers of Democrats that are voting for me, and they're not voting for me because I am supporting Donald Trump or opposing anybody else. They're voting because they're looking, truly looking for change, and they believe I will bring the type of change they're looking for. Specifically, I don't want to do a campaign ad, but it's very interesting. We are getting a lot of support from Democrats, and I'm grateful for that. I really am.
All right, I'm very late for a break. I'll just one more quick question from a listener, and then if you're on the phones, we're going to try to fly through the rest of the hour here. Caleb in Pittsford just wants to know. He says, "Did the Shoe Leather Express only hit Republican registered homes? I felt jilted when the candidate skipped me over." Mark calls his door-to-door campaign in the Shoe Leather Express, for those who don't know, and Caleb says, "You skipped him."
I'll come by. Where do you live, Caleb? You leave your address, I'll come by.
Are you only going to GOP
registered?
No, register?
I'm going to every single home. There may have been a point where I had to take a call because as you're campaigning door to door, I'm still doing business. I'm getting phone calls and I may have gotten distracted. But no, I'm hitting every home. I've been to over 11,000 homes at this point. I've gone through literally I'm on my seventh pair of shoes. I bought some Clarks. They're like butter. Really nice. Very smooth. Very comfortable. And they are guaranteed. The soles are guaranteed. But no, I'm going to every home, Democrats and Republicans. And Caleb, if you leave your address off air, I guarantee I'll come by your house.
All right, let's get our only break of the hour and come back to your phone calls for Republican Gatestown Supervisor Mark Cassini, who is challenging Louise Slaughter for her seat in Congress. Coming up in our second hour, we talk third parties. And since third parties haven't gained traction in this presidential election, are we to conclude that it's never going to happen? With this field, if we don't see the Green Party or the Libertarian Party really breaking through, is it always just going to be a two-party major system? Well, we're going to talk about that with people from the Green and Libertarian parties and the author of a series of books about a third-party candidate. That's next hour. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Mark Cassini is here with me. We hope to have Louise Slaughter in studio with us sometime before the election. That invitation has been out for months now, and we hope to make that happen. Bill in Rochester, next. Go ahead, Bill.
Hi, Mark.
Hi, Bill.
Hey,
this is not a hard question, is it, Bill?
On healthcare in America, and specifically a good example of the problems that we have with prices is the EpiPen controversy that occurred earlier this year, whereby it seemed like EpiPen was gouging the public for the medicine that they offered.
It's horrible.
And
yeah.
And I know some have suggested we put price controls on EpiPen to better manage that. And I would disagree with that. I think a much better solution would be to fast track some competitors to EpiPen, which I believe are being sold in Europe now, to the market, thereby providing more competition to EpiPen rather than more bureaucratic control. And I was just wondering what your views are on that.
Well, thank you, Bill. Go ahead, Mark.
Bill, you're a man after my own heart. I believe in competition to drive down prices. But not to leap from the EpiPen, and that was disturbing. I mean, that is ridiculous. What a markup that is. We do need competition to bring the prices down. But, you know, I was talking to a group of hospital managers the other day, and one of the things I'd love to see, specifically with Medicare, because this is a big expense, it's a couple hundred billion dollars, pharmaceutical specifically. For whatever reason, in the Medicare program, we do not negotiate prices or do competitive bidding on prices for our pharmaceuticals. I mean, we are the largest purchaser of pharmaceuticals in the country, you know, the single largest purchaser is the federal government on the Medicare program. It is stunning to me that we don't negotiate prices. And if we're not doing that for pharmaceuticals, what else aren't we doing to really create a competitive environment to bring the costs of drugs down? That pharmaceuticals is the fastest growing section of our healthcare costs right now. And I'm surprised nobody's calling about the Affordable Care Act.
Well, speaking of the Affordable Care Act, there is somebody.
That wasn't a lead-in, by the way.
Well, okay. No, there is. Keith, go ahead. Get that question in right now.
Wow, timing is great, Evan. Couple questions, Mark.
Hi, Keith.
Corporate tax, only about 20% of the corporations in this country actually pay tax. If you're a small company, you're not going to pay tax. You got money in the bank, actually, you're probably just going to take it. It's payroll for yourself. You're not going to pay it. Tax on. I've had a business for 40 years.
Keith, I know
I've
lots of small businesses that pay taxes.
And I paid all my subcontractors, unlike Donald Trump. But on the Affordable Care Act, let's say you win. Are you going to vote to repeal it like the 46, I believe, other times the Republicans did? And I spent last week at a four-day medical conference. One of the things that came up, we were talking with a medical director for one of the, I think they're called Province in Australia. They fund their healthcare system. Most of the funding is done through a 1% income tax. You know, so if you work, make $100, you get a dollar taken out. All right, and then the employer matches it. We have a similar system in this country. We have a 1.65%. That gets taken out for Medicare, but you can't collect it until you're 65 years old. Now, there is something inherently wrong with the healthcare in this country that we're paying 1.65% now, but we don't get it until we're old. From now until 65, we're basically every man for himself. What Australia has, they have a system. In this country, we have an industry, and there is a big difference. And it shows when you have politicians, I don't care what side of the aisle you're on, that will do nothing. And you can't say you're going to go to Washington and do something because you're going to be a freshman. Nobody would listen to you.
Louise
can't do anything.
Okay. Well Keith, I appreciate those questions. I know Mark does as well. Starting with his baseline question, would you vote for a repeal of Obamacare?
The answer is, if there is something better, because I've heard repeal and replace 100 times, and I'm fine with that if there's something that we can replace it with.
Are you seeing anything to replace it with?
Nothing yet.
Okay, so right now you wouldn't vote to repeal.
I don't want to be wishy-washy. I don't want to be too nuanced either, but here's the deal. Right now, the Affordable Care Act, without a doubt, and Bill Clinton called it the craziest thing, he's right, deductibles have gone up, co-pays have gone up, a lot of people can't afford it. The exchanges, I believe the exchanges will collapse within the next 3 or 4 years because you're seeing, we started out with 24 co-ops in the exchanges, we're literally down to 6 now because of financial problems. We had one right here in the state of New York, Health Republic went belly up. The exchanges are in trouble. The Cadillac tax has been delayed, which was supposed to reduce the deficit. So the Affordable Care Act, quite frankly, I think is in serious trouble the way it is right now. But the problem is you have 20 million people on the Affordable Care Act. What do you do with them? Do you send them over to Medicare? Do you send them over to Medicaid? Is there a mechanism in place? I said this, and I know it's probably not politically correct to say, I don't have the answer right now, and I would like to get the experts to sit down. As I told the hospital managers the other day, we need to find out exactly what our options are. I want what's best for the American people. I do believe in opening up competition across state lines for insurance companies, but that alone will not solve the problem. Further, I just anecdotally was talking about the fact that we don't negotiate drug prices with pharmaceutical companies, and I know the lobbies are very strong with the pharmaceutical. I haven't gotten any money from the pharmaceutical company. All my money's come from neighbors. So, but you know, we have to start negotiating prices on pharmaceuticals. There are a lot of things that we need to do.
Public option? Would you support a public option at any point?
I don't think the country, it's not a good fit for the country at this point, a public option.
And I assume single payer is a non-starter for you.
Non-starter, yeah.
Okay. So that's an honest answer, that you support reforms if they can make premiums more affordable?
Evan, we've got to do something. We have to do the Affordable Care Act will not survive like this. If we can find a way to repair and fix it and move it forward to make sure that with the understanding that we can start bringing down the cost. Because even though premiums have slowed, I think that's a fact. Premium costs have slowed, although in some areas you see some spikes. The problem is the copays and the deductibles have gone through the roof. The bottom line for the folks are that you're paying more out of pocket, you're getting less, and the Affordable Care Act and the exchanges are shaky at best.
All right. Michelle in Brighton is next up. Go ahead, Michelle. I'm sorry. Michelle's in Rochester. Go ahead, Michelle.
Hi, yes. So my question for Mr. Orsini is that you suggested during the debate that your comments against the LGBT community, the community that I am a member of, was some kind of, I think your words were an 11th grade project, but you wrote them as a grown man in your 40s. This isn't about changing your position on marriage equality. You call this community, my community, sexual deviance. You called me a sexual deviant for just loving my partner. This is something that President Obama and Hillary Clinton never did during their evolution. So how can you expect to represent this community when all you do is just demean us?
Okay. Michelle, thanks for the call. Go ahead, Mark.
Thank you, Michelle. And I am sorry that, as a Catholic, I did look at this as wrong. And there's no question about it. And I have evolved. But you're wrong about Hillary Clinton actually made some very negative remarks about gay and lesbian couples and some recently released WikiLeaks email. And so that's not correct. But more.
But do you regret what you wrote?
Absolutely. Okay. And understand, and in fairness to me, as well as apologizing, understand I was a Roman Catholic growing up in the town of Gates, who saw this as a wrong. Now, the comments you're referring to, by the way, were not my comments. They were a person who was on the Writers Club who made those comments. And I was really agreeing at that time that it was wrong. It was, morally wrong. And, I never said that. But some of this stuff has also been taken a little bit out of context, too. But having said that, the bottom line is we all need to take a step back and evolve when it comes to this issue. I think I've done that. I'm willing to change, and other people, I think, are looking at this now. Other Catholics are looking at this now and deciding whether the Pope is right, and I've decided that the Pope is right. So, and again, I'm sorry, but I do apologize sincerely. I'm not making excuses for it, but that's where I was as a Catholic 10 years ago. And a lot of Catholics are still in that position.
That is true. And you've said that, you, of course, gay people in your circle of friends and family. How would you feel about someone in your friends and family who is transgender? Would you think that's a perfectly acceptable part of life, or would you find a problem with that?
No, again, I think the Pope made it clear. It's not our job to judge people on their faith's journey. And again, I'm so proud and grateful of the Pope's remarks. It gave me the courage, and it gave me the direction as a Catholic on moving forward on this issue. But I will tell you, it's interesting that the American Psychiatric Institute back 10 years ago had called the transgender community a mental disorder. Actually, it was classified as a DSM-4 mental disorder. The IRS And that's where all this came from, was an article about whether a transgender reassignment surgery should be given tax breaks. The IRS denied it, and there was some controversy on why they denied it. But back then, the IRS would not support it. The American Psychiatric Association did classify it as a mental disorder, and now they have changed, and then they changed just recently. So a lot of people are evolving. This is not, you know, we as people grow, we learn, and we become better people. Can I tell you that I'm a perfect human being? I can tell you, but it wouldn't be true. And I'll do the best I can as my life goes on to learn and grow and be a better person down the road.
Number of questions on this subject. How do you feel about the Black Lives Matter movement?
You know, the Black Lives Matters movement is trying to highlight what's going on right now in our community. There is this huge racial divide that exists. I've been part of Unite Rochester. And to ignore the fact that there is a racial divide is ignoring the fact that there is discrimination and suffering that's going on within our own community. I think the mayor called it we have a tale of two cities here. We have unemployment rates within parts of our city of Rochester that actually are double the unemployment rates during the Great Depression. We have homelessness. The children in this school district, in the Rochester City School District, they're over with their moms, traveling from car to car, couch to couch, over 2,000. They're predominantly families, minority families. So there is a huge racial divide. We have to figure out what we're going to do to move forward. I have said clearly I am a supporter of affordable housing. I'm a supporter of programs, which is unusual, folks. So people that are out there, and I'm not just saying it, I've actually done it in my community. I have fought for it, and I've taken a lot of grief from my own Republican Party on it. Until this day, I'm still taking grief on it. But affordable housing is critical. Services for homeless families. We've done this in my town. Again, I'm not just talking about it. I'm doing it. I walk the walk. So, you know, we have to find a way. And as a congressman, I'll continue to support those types of efforts to help those that are most vulnerable in our society, whether it's, you know, in this case, you know, the minority community, or in other cases, the disabled community, which also is struggling and is dealing with discrimination.
Let's try to be quick here. Brian on Twitter says, can federal representatives stop New York's elected officials from raiding dedicated roads and bridge funds, since the federal government contributes to the states?
Oh, yeah, they can. Thank you for the question. We have precedent. I'll give you the DWI laws and the 55-mile-an-hour law, where when the federal government is contributing money to a state, in this case, we are giving billions of dollars to these states for road funds. When that money is not being used properly, we have the right as a federal government to say, hold on, guys, you're diverting funds that we're giving you? Nope, we're not going to give it to you anymore. We're going to stop. We're putting it on hold. And I guarantee, and I will do this, regardless of whether I get support from Democrats or Republicans, I'm going to do it. If I'm elected, that's the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to say, guys, either you're with me or not with me, but I want to make sure that no more money goes to the state of New York until they stop diverting the road funds. Our roads and bridges are literally collapsing. We have people that are being struck by falling concrete as they drive under bridges like they did this year in July in the town of Gates. And the road fund that the state is using is only using 23% of that money for roads and bridges. I mean, that's disgusting. That's terrible. It's awful. That shouldn't be that way. It's being used for the general fund and other purposes, and it shouldn't happen that way. And yeah, absolutely. Can we stop it? We have the right to do that, and we should, and I will do my best to make that happen.
All right, Holly in Pittsford, 30 seconds or less. Go ahead, Holly.
Oh, goodness.
Yes, Mark, explain to me why you should be making reproduction, prevention, and care decisions for me and my daughters. How are you better equipped than me, my family, and my pastor, and my physicians to make these decisions?
All right, Holly, thank you. Go ahead, Mark.
Well, thank you, Holly. I appreciate the question. The Supreme Court has already made that decision, and it's been for decades, that the woman has a right to choose in this particular instance. And so that right's already been guaranteed, and I don't see that going away. My personal religious belief, my faith, is pro-life. I have never swayed from that. And so I would say to you, as a person of faith, a Catholic, I find all life to be sacred. So that's the difference, I think, that people have a hard time, the distinction that people have a hard time making. But the Supreme Court's already made the decision here. This has been a right for decades. But that's, you're asking me my personal faith beliefs. That's it.
Okay, 30 seconds for the last quick question here. There were no questions on climate changes in the VP and the regular presidential debates. And you said taxpayers maybe shouldn't be funding alternative energies like solar until it's more scalable. Should taxpayers stop subsidizing fossil fuels?
Both. The answer is to both, yes. I think that we shouldn't stop, and I said this in the debate, we shouldn't stop the research and development to get to renewable energy. I think that's where we need to be. But we can't just throw billions at this stuff when company after company.
I take that point,
collapse.
But we're subsidizing fossil fuel too, though, aren't we?
Absolutely, and we should not be.
Okay, so you would be in favor of some kind of legislation going forward that scales back subsidy
Absolutely.
For fossil fuels?
Okay. The government should not be doing that in the energy industry. It's not necessary.
Mark Cassini is running for Congress against Louis Slaughter. He's given us his hour, and we hope that Louis Slaughter will do that in the coming weeks here. And if you win, I hope you come back here often to this studio to see us here.
I'll give you lots of love, Evan. I appreciate you having me. Thank you.
Gatestown Supervisor Mark Cassini. Short break, more connections next.